Live from the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Kimberly Izar, sitting in for Tim Bruno. Well, on today's show, Dan Hoos from Sullivan County Government with the latest on the closure of the care center at Sunset Lake, the reopening of the Child Care Assistance Program, and more. Scammers are using fake offers of new cards, free benefits, and other incentives to get your Medicare number. We'll talk with the New York Statewide Senior Action Council about the latest Medicare card scams and the red flags to watch out for. And a legendary Catskills resort could be getting a second life. We'll hear about plans to redevelop the former Grossinger's property in Liberty and what's being proposed for the site that helped inspire Dirty Dancing. But first, news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Linda Kenyon. Stocks opened higher this morning after a big sell-off yesterday. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average rose about 340 points in early trading.
Investors will be keeping a close eye on the bond market today. The yield on long-term government bonds rebounded Thursday, despite an effort by the Treasury Department to push those bond yields down. Bondholders have been demanding a bigger payback in return for lending the government money. They're concerned about the size of the federal debt, which reached $40 trillion this week, as well as stubborn inflation. Gasoline prices typically fall as summer draws to a close, but AAA says this could be the most expensive August ever at the gas pump. The average price of regular gas is just under $4.11 a gallon, topping the previous high set back in 2022. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
Federal agents have seized the home of former California Democratic Congressman Eric Swalwell and taken his electronic devices. The searches are part of an investigation into allegations of sexual misconduct. NPR's Ryan Lucas reports.
Federal agents stopped Swalwell at San Francisco Airport on Saturday with a search warrant and seized his electronic devices. A day later, agents searched the former congressman's home in Washington, D.C. That's according to a person familiar with the matter who spoke to NPR on condition of anonymity to discuss an ongoing investigation. The probe is focused on the sexual misconduct allegations that multiple women have made against Swalwell, allegations that he denies. After those allegations came to light in April, Swalwell resigned from Congress and dropped out of the California governor's race. His attorney did not immediately respond to a request for comment. The former congressman is also facing investigations by state authorities in California and New York. Ryan Lucas, NPR News, Washington.
The FBI says it stopped a plot by a woman who was planning to set off a bomb at the New York State Capitol. Samuel King, with New York Public News Network, says the suspect appeared in federal court yesterday. Federal prosecutors allege she pledged allegiance to ISIS.
Federal law enforcement agents say Jessica Bowie had a gun and a dummy explosive device with her Wednesday as she met with informants who she thought were helping her carry out her plan to destroy as much of the Capitol as possible and, quote, kill all the senators. First Assistant U.S. Attorney John Sarcone says the arrest should serve as a warning to other would-be terrorists.
We are vigilant, we are prepared, and just as we stop this defendant, we will continue to disrupt plots and protect the American people.
The arrest comes just weeks before the anniversary of the September 11th attacks. The FBI says they've stopped more than 400 individuals from carrying out alleged attacks here at home and abroad. For NPR News, I'm Samuel King in Albany.
You're listening to NPR News. The world's oldest living person is celebrating her 117th birthday today. Ethel Caterham from England got the title after the death last year of a 116-year-old Brazilian nun. NPR's Fatima Al-Kassab has more.
Ethel Caterham was born in 1909 and has lived through the Russian Revolution, the Great Depression, and two world wars. She's the last surviving subject of King Edward VII. For her 116th birthday last year, she got a visit from his great-great-grandson, King Charles. According to Guinness World Records, she's also one of the oldest people to survive COVID after contracting it in 2020. She's celebrating with family and friends at a nursing home in Surrey, outside London, and says she's looking forward to what next year might bring. Fatima Al-Kassab, NPR News, London.
Prince Harry and six others, including Elton John, have been ordered to pay the equivalent of $13 million to the publisher of Britain's Daily Mail. The order follows an unsuccessful invasion of privacy case against the publisher. Justice Matthew Nicklin says the payment is due by August 28th. The group lost its case in London last month when it alleged illegal phone hacking. The publisher had denied the claims, and the court found there was a lack of evidence to prove the plaintiff's case. The judgment comes as Harry and his family plan to move back to the UK. The prince's legal battles have helped to strain his relationships with his family and with the media. I'm Linda Kenyon, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Capital One, offering their dining and entertainment card, Saver. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Details at CapitalOne.com. And listeners like you who donate to this NPR station.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Kimberly Izar, filling in for Tim Bruno this morning. Thanks for joining us. Well, it is Friday, and this is usually our time to check in with Dan Hoos, Communications Director for Sullivan County Government. Welcome back, Dan.
Hello, Kim. How are you?
I'm doing good. Yes. How are you doing?
It's been a week, a tough one for a lot of people, but yeah. I'm happy to be here with you.
Good. Well, we're going to dive into some of that. Yesterday we were at the Sullivan County Legislature, which meets most Thursdays at the Sullivan County Government in Monticello, and talked about a bunch of things.
Oh, yes.
Let's start with the care center, which we found out, earlier this week that it'll be closing. We've had you on throughout the week to talk a little bit about this already, but let's just remind folks a little bit about why the closure is happening and what the plan is, for the 93 long-term residents that currently live there.
Yeah, actually, that's less now. I think we're to 90 or even under, because there's already been some transfers of residents. So we are working very carefully, sensitively, compassionately, and diligently with them and their families, because this is something that's disruptive to their lives. And we recognize that. And it's one of the unfortunate realities of this that I'm personally sad about as well, not just professionally. So we have been working also with the staff as well. We have 86 staff members, county staff members over there. There's more staff than that, but they're agency staffers. So they're what you might call temps.
Right.
So they're going to be handled by their staffing agencies. But we're working with those employees. The legislators just passed yesterday several resolutions relating directly to them about ensuring that we have appropriate and safe staffing levels for the facility, but also that employees are treated right as we inevitably move towards the loss of those jobs. Now, some of the employees will probably be able to transfer into some other county jobs, but we don't have 86 county jobs waiting for them elsewhere. So many of them are going to have to seek other employment. Our Center for Workforce Development stands ready to assist them. And last I knew was planning a job fair specifically for them, to especially healthcare industry. There's going to be demand for many of those positions or for those folks. But there is a retention incentive that the legislature passed yesterday, which is for eligible full-time and regular part-time county employees. If they remain employed by the county and continue to perform the necessary duties throughout the closure, they'll receive a retention incentive equal to 10% of their current annual base salary, prorated over the three-month closure process and paid out on a biweekly basis. Exempt management employees who remain employed, and that's a different category that I won't describe here, but if they stay and perform the necessary duties, they'll receive a retention incentive equal to 20% of their current annual base salary, again, prorated. The incentive continues until either the employee separates from county employment or completion of the closure process. There's also a stipulation that they remain actively employed, that they don't voluntarily or involuntarily leave until the time when they normally would. And there's also a longevity payment that will allow county workers get a longevity payment every year. And employees who currently work in the adult care center do not voluntarily resign from county employment prior to the end of 2026 will receive a longevity payment as if they had worked through to the end of 2026, regardless of when the closure is or when their position is finally abolished, because legislators gave permission for the county manager to abolish positions as the population shrinks at the facility. They're also will be eligible for 3 additional months of county-provided health insurance coverage following separation from employment. So this is meant to thank our county employees for the work they're doing, recognize the fact that this is an extremely difficult and challenging time for them and their families, and to do what we can do legally and financially to help them through this transition.
So it sounds like there's already quite a bit of transition already happening, especially when it comes to supporting county employees with employment transition, et cetera. What about for, now the 90 residents that are there with the closure planning to conclude by the end of the year? What are the conversations in terms of where they are going?
Well, the goal is to close by the end of the year, but realistically, it could take longer than that. We have already made a promise to all the residents and their families. No one is going to be kicked out on the street and left without a skilled care option to choose. It may not be what they want. In fact, we've already heard from families who are like, this is not what they wanted. And I think our legislature chair, Nadia Reich, said, you know, we didn't want to do this either. But it's where the county is moving, and so it's necessary for us, and we're required by the State Department of Health to make sure that we not only find alternate accommodations for these residents, but we follow up for the next month after they've been relocated and placed in another facility to make sure everything is going as it should. So until that process is complete, the care center will not close, and that may last into 2027. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if it did. But for right now, we have all hands on deck with it, not just all the care center employees and administration. The county manager and the deputy county manager had spent the whole day over there on Wednesday, and not just talking to employees, talking to families. We have legislators involved, human resources involved. Our Office for the Aging and our Division of Community Resources is involved in all of this to make sure that we, as much as possible, make this transition smooth and clear. And that is an ongoing challenge that is happening even as we speak at the care center today.
I want to come back to, a statement County Legislature Chair Nadia Reich said when the news was released on Wednesday, just a little bit more about why the decision happened. She said that essentially the decision follows the county's financial challenges and the inability to transfer operations to its consulting firm. You know, you've talked before about the sales tax decline that the county has been facing over the year. How does this news, you know, impact the county's overall revenue picture? Do we know that yet, or is it too early?
Well, it's too early to see, in part because we don't know the full sales tax picture, because we're still going forward with 2026, although that seems to be improving. So I would say that the county manager will have a clearer path now in trying to get to as low a property tax increase as possible, the goal being to be under 2%. I don't know if there will be a 0% property tax increase. I would love to be on here talking about that if that becomes the case. But the care center now not having to be put into the budget, even though it had its own enterprise fund, we still had to cover shortfalls, and we never knew how much those shortfalls would be. Now it's clear that we may have to budget somewhat for the care center in 2027, but not as much. So definitely it will make that process clearer. I hesitate to say easier, because it's never easy putting together what is at this point around a $300 million budget. That's what it is this year, and that's what I expect it'll be next year. There are a lot of other things to juggle as well, and a lot of other services to provide. But I believe that this will help improve at least the budget planning process. And we're getting close, only approximately 2 months away from when the tentative budget will be proposed to the legislature by the county manager.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure you'll be keeping us posted on all of these developments around the care center closure. Some other news coming out of the airport terminal. It looks like there is a potential lease of office space there. What's happening there?
Yes, I've been aggressively marketing the airport because I know a lot of people are like, well, getting rid of the care center, but we're keeping the airport. Well, the airport has tremendous potential to bring revenue to the county and should be, as the care center always had wanted to be, self-sustaining. Well, the airport, I think, can be self-sustaining. It currently costs a little under, I think, $600,000 a year by taxpayers to operate the airport. And I firmly believe, as both a county employee, but also as a person who learned to fly at the airport, that the airport can be self-sustaining. We have a lot more business going through there than people realize. And yes, of course, most county residents aren't going to be going to that airport. It's not offering passenger service. Hopefully, it will have a restaurant shortly. Mm-hmm. But it has the potential to bring in a lot of revenue from higher income, wealthier folks who I think we probably all could agree, listen, if they can afford to do it and it benefits the taxpayer, let's tap into that. So we have a company that paints airplanes, basically. It's a detailer of aviation aircraft that saw this property and said, this is where we want to expand to. They agree with us. There is so much potential there. But to be able to lease to them, we actually have to go through a formal process, which includes a public hearing that's going to be held on Thursday, September 17th at 10:20 a.m. in the hearing room in the Government Center. It'll be part of the normal flow of legislative meetings that day, and people will have a chance to comment, get to know better understanding of it. I hope to have more information to convey before that. But basically, I think at this point, they're looking to rent one of the office spaces. It's $800 a month that we're planning to charge. And I've talked to them directly. They are extremely eager to be part of it. And we're hopeful that that starts a domino effect of we have six other offices for people to rent there, that we can have them all full and have that terminal that the state gave us quite a bit of money for really operating and humming. And as I said, really taking the airport off the backs of the taxpayers completely. And if not, creating revenue for the county.
And you mentioned you've been marketing the airport at, you know, trade shows, conferences, mm-hmm. et cetera. What's the kind of like the appetite from some of the attendees and participants? Is there an appetite or interest when they learn about the
yes.
county airport?
Yeah, there's excitement. I think for me, the best part was the excitement from the young people. There are people who are in, for example, Dutchess County Community College has an aviation program. One of the students is actually from Monticello. Is like, I may be able to have a job back in my home county if things really get going with the airport, because we want to hire a fixed base operator, somebody who can provide repair services right on site and can help run the airport and can provide local jobs, several dozen local jobs, hopefully in the long run. So we've seen a lot of interest. The business jet, corporate jet market, which is what we're aiming for, is a very active market right now. We're not looking to do passenger service. You could charter a plane there, but as I've pointed to Stewart International Airport in Newburgh, where plenty of us have flown in and out of, it seems sometimes they have trouble keeping an airline flying in and out of there, that it changes every year or 2 years. And we tried that back in the 70s and it didn't work well. So we feel, and the legislature, the county officials feel like this is really where our niche can be, where we can be much cheaper and much, we have more room to expand than closer airports like Teterboro or Westchester County Airport. And even then, I'm not sure we're necessarily competing with them because they offer scheduled airline service. We can maybe be the pressure relief because you could be waiting years for a hangar at any of those locations, whereas at Sullivan County, we have hangar space and we have 600 acres to develop. So there's a lot of potential at that airport that needs to be tapped into.
One other update from the legislature. Two more that I want to lift up. One, the approval of the new Human Rights Office, of the new Human Rights Commission that is moving, I believe, or
yes.
where is it heading?
Yes, right now the Human Rights Office, which is headed by our executive director, Ramon Wilson, is on the second floor of the government center. And as was stated at legislature yesterday, there are people, for whatever reason, that are not comfortable coming to the government center to make their complaints or have a discussion, usually very sensitive discussions, about human rights issues in Sullivan County. So Ramon had asked a while back, could we find someplace that's not far away but off-site, and there's a new office development that just opened at the corner of High Street and Old Liberty Road in Monticello. It's within walking distance of the government center. So the legislature approved yesterday a lease of that space for the next 5 years. I believe it's $900 a month. And that's where the human rights office will be moved to, so that as many people as possible feel comfortable coming there and having a private conversation with Ramon.
And the Human Rights Commission got their first full-time executive director, Ramon, just like a year or, well, maybe 2 years now?
I'm trying to think myself. It's been a year or two Ramon.
Yeah.
It's probably been longer than I think it is. But he's a great guy, an accomplished musician, a part of a Grammy award-winning team. I think you guys have talked to him about that part of it. And if
he
you haven't, you should.
Yes.
And he is also very, very focused on trying to bridge that very wide gap sometimes between what the Human Rights Commission can actually do, because they don't have investigatory or enforcement powers, with what they actually can do, which is provide a sympathetic ear and a way to start the process of getting people's concerns and complaints resolved. And making sure, of course, too, that you're filtering out the legitimate complaints from the illegitimate complaints. So he's got a tough job, but boy, does he do it well. And I'm thrilled that he's going to have a chance to talk to even more people who will now feel comfortable coming to his new office. It isn't open yet. We'll announce when it is.
That's great. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be back with more with Dan Hoos from Sullivan County Government. This is Radio Chatskill.
Pints for Public Radio is back. Join Radio Catskill tomorrow from 6 to 10 p.m. at Rose's Bar and Grill in Berryville. With DJs James Friedman, Tommy Castro, and Woody Wood Jr. spinning tunes, it's an evening of brews, beats, and community spirit, with a portion of the proceeds benefiting Radio Catskill. Come out, drink beer, and support public radio. It's just that simple. Pints for Public Radio, tomorrow at 6 at Rose's Bar and Grill in Berryville. Cheers! Support comes from Sullivan 180, building healthy communities through people, places, and policy, one degree at a time. More information at sullivan180.org, and from listeners like you who donate at wjffradio.org.
The Daily draws on the unrivaled quality and expertise of the New York Times Global Newsroom. Our mission is to tell stories more deeply and to incorporate a new kind of transparency. Weekday evenings at 6:30 here on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Kimberly Izar. And here in the studio with me now, we're talking to Dan Hoos, Communications Director for Sullivan County Government, with the latest news on what's happening throughout the county. Dan, we've been talking about Care Center, what's happening with Human Rights Commission, airport. Let's talk a little bit about the news with SUNY Sullivan. Their budget got approved.
Yes, their budget got approved. It actually included a $700,000, approximately $700,000 increase in funding from the county. The county, of course, expecting to see results from that extra investment, but I think all the legislators feel like the college is a gem. It's our only institution of higher learning in Sullivan County. So there was a public hearing yesterday just before that. I think there was one speaker, along with the president of the college, of course, David Potash. And it got passed unanimously, which hasn't always been the case in the past, but it did this time. And I think legislators are excited about where the college is going and want to make sure that it has the investment it needs. Of course, that said, it's supposed to be funded more by the state as well, and the state never has as much. They focused on their four-year institutions, not as much on their two-year institutions. But as a graduate of SUNY Sullivan myself, and my husband just graduating this year from it, I can tell you it is an absolute essential in the county. It jumpstarts a lot of careers. A lot of people who have given so much back to Sullivan County have gone to SUNY Sullivan. So I'm glad to see that there's that investment. And now we're also going to be partnering a little closer with the college because the legislature yesterday also approved the SUNY Sullivan Federal Work Study Program. It's a workforce development initiative. And according to the resolution, it's designed to create meaningful experiential learning opportunities for students while supporting the county's long-term talent pipeline goals. And in other words, this is an internship program where we'll get students from the college who may be interested in a government job of some sort. And it doesn't necessarily mean you're sitting in an office. Maybe it's more you're on the nursing track and you're interested in that as well. But whatever it is, we want to develop that talent pipeline that not only has students graduating from SUNY Sullivan with some actual work experience, maybe coming to work for us after they do graduate because they had such a good experience with the county. So I'm excited for that partnership to be formed and to see how that grows over the next few years.
I remember when I was in college, I did a work study, and it was related to, I think, communications at our library. And here we are doing communications.
There you go. See?
Definitely a very valuable
program. I'm a huge believer in internships. I've had interns in my office over the years. And yeah, it's extra work for us, but it makes such a difference in their lives. And people go on to careers. There's a local communications professional in one of our area public school districts who first started as an intern in my office. And now to see him excel and thrive and be able to live locally and earn a living wage, I'm glad we were able to provide that.
It's amazing. One other update that coming out of the legislature, I want to lift up. The auditors gave its annual report. This is something they do every single year, citing both challenges and impacts. Talk to me a little bit more about some of their findings.
Yeah, overall, they always come with a very officially neutral point of view. That's why there are independent auditors, because they are looking at us from an outsider's perspective, not an insider's. And they noted that our expenses as of sort of right around the turn of 2024 to 2025 started to exceed our revenues, whereas since the COVID pandemic, it had been the other way around. And of course, we've been talking about the sales tax revenue dropping, but there were other factors in that as well. And they have a PowerPoint they showed yesterday. I'm going to be putting it up on the website. You probably have it too. If you don't, I'll get a copy to you, Kim.
Thank you.
and it spells out what our different expenses and revenues were from a very high level, but it still is very informative. And what, of course, was pointed out in particular was our fund balance, which is considered our surplus funds, but most of those are encumbered in some way. And our only part that isn't encumbered, our unassigned fund balance, dropped in 2024 from $13.5 million to just over $5 million in 2025. That's down by $8 million. And I asked my boss, the county manager, Josh Potosik, this morning, why was that? And he said most of that has to do with the decline in sales tax revenue and us having to take from that surplus money to help balance the budget so we can avoid higher property taxes, the increases than already were faced. So now legislators once again are going to have that difficult decision to make of how much we delve into that unassigned fund balance. Because while the whole fund balance totals a little over $84 million, everything but that $5 million and whatever we've added to it this year, if we have, is already encumbered for something else. There are different revenue funds. And of course, there's also you want to have, and that's a good thing we have a little over 2 months of operating expenses should there be some huge issue like the pandemic created with us, right, that we have enough to operate if revenues were to just fall through the floor. But it is still a big concern and part of what we need to know to be able to plan the next budgets, why they come this time of year.
And on the expenses side of what the auditors found, I can't remember the specific categories, but I think that
there was like the economic support, the government assistance, those expenses were increasing over the years.
Significantly.
What did the auditor say about that?
Yeah, it's economic assistance and opportunity in the bar graph that they gave. And again, I'm going to post this online so people can see this. But in 2021, that totaled about $53.2 million of our expenditures. Fast forward to 2025, now totals $81.7 million of an expenditure. So it's almost double. And so that kind of expense, and that's the largest part of the expense, is what we always need to make sure that we're focusing on. But also trying to provide as many services as we can to the public. It's obviously, as we talked about the care center, not always possible if it's not mandated. But it's always the focus of how can we better serve the taxpayers without draining their wallets completely and leaving them without anything. And I'm sure you can talk to many people in the county who already feel the taxes are way too high, right, even though the county's tax burden is one of the smaller ones compared to, for example, like school tax bills. But it all adds up, and we know we're part of that. So we have to take that into account. And these independent auditors help shine a light on where we need to look.
Other news coming out of the county, the child care assistance program. There is some big news around this. Talk to me a little bit about potential reopening happening.
Yes. Our folks who are involved in the child care assistance program at the county level, it's paid for by the state, but we have local folks who distribute that, have been as frustrated as the actual recipients themselves that we ran out of money over a year ago because the state increased the eligibility threshold so that many more people, and that's a good thing, many more people were eligible to get assistance for child care because many people, most people, cannot afford to be stay-at-home parents unless the other person in the household or other folks in the household are bringing in significant income. So this child care assistance program is a real lifeline for families and encourages people to have families and not have to worry as much. I mean, if you're a parent, you're going to worry anyway on everything, but at least not as much about this cost, which can be significant. But because there was such an increased demand that came with the widening of the thresholds, we ran out of money, and it's been many, many months now since we've been able to fund anything other than the folks who had already signed up prior to this money running out. Well, now we've gotten double the amount that we have gotten in years past from, I believe it went from $3 million to $6 million of an allocation. Yeah. And so October 1st, 2026, the payments will begin again, and we're actually going to start. We accept applications all the time, but we're really going to start encouraging and telling people apply in mid-September. I believe September 16th is when we're saying we're officially reopening the program. It'll be a first-come, first-served basis, so you'll want to be making that application on September 16th or there or as close thereafter. Again, you can do it earlier now, but if it were me, I'd aim for that opening time. It's September 16th at 9 a.m., and our folks are going to continually monitor funding as we authorize cases so that we try to mitigate before we suddenly find out we're out of money. Because the state wants to work with us. They actually have been working very well with us to try to cover the gap. And legislators are even talking about if we get to a point where we're going to be facing another gap, that they might be willing to devote some county funding to that, even though at this point it's all state funding we get.
Well, that's a question that we and several families that I've spoken to have. You know, I was just talking to a mom last week. She is 24 weeks pregnant. She has a 3-year-old daughter, and she relies on these child care subsidies. Yes. And what she was saying was that, I mean, she had to reduce the amount of time that her daughter is in daycare. Mm-hmm. It's like another car payment. And one concern that she had was, well, what if it closes again very, very quickly? And you talked a little bit about kind of some of the ways that you're hoping to mitigate it.
Yes. And part of it, too, is that applications, for example, are not going to be allowed in bulk. I guess in the past we've had bulk applications that were submitted on behalf of other families. Each applying family has to submit their own application to the Child Care Assistance Program. It can't be done on behalf of anyone else. Each applying family also has to complete an interview and submit all the documentation required to make an eligibility determination, which we have 30 days to make. So, and we'll be putting out more information very, very shortly about what you'll have to provide in terms of documentation. But our staff's going to be they have wide latitude to use great discretion to be very sensitive, but also very strict to how this money is going to be put out there because of situations like that, where people who are legitimately eligible for this are not finding that they're left out in the cold.
I'm sure you're going to have more news on that as we move a little bit closer to that September 16th reopening. Some good news coming out of Lake Superior. I saw this, I think, on Facebook yesterday. Lake Superior Beaches is back open.
Yes, the algae has dissipated. We do not treat the water there. We have to wait for it to dissipate by Mother Nature, and it has. It's this disgusting green slime that... I mean, some kids might enjoy playing with, but actually you do not want to be ingesting or even inhaling. So
it's not fun.
No, it's not. So it is back open. We have a lifeguard at that beach. So we are welcoming people back to the beach area. The rest of the park has been open all along. But of course, the swimming area is very popular, especially during the hotter weather. So, yep, it is open and people should come and take a dip.
I live not too far from Lake Superior, and I've been waiting for this news. So this is good news for me.
Good.
One other thing I want to lift up. The next Household Hazardous Waste event is coming up in just a few weeks in September. Talk to me a little bit about what this event is and what should, you know, residents prepare for.
Yeah, Sunday, September 20th, from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. at our Monticello Transfer Station, which is off of East Broadway and Monticello on Landfill Drive, is going to be our second of two household hazardous waste collection events that we have in Sullivan County, where, and Tim gets so excited about this, I'm sure he's already hooting and hollering if he's listening to this, but we accept all sorts of things that you have in your garage or in your basement you don't really know what to do with and you're worried, would they accept it? Paint, solvents, stains, inks, pool chemicals, acids, wood preservatives, mercury-containing devices, pesticides, herbicides, batteries, including car batteries, all sorts of things that you're like, oh, does this have some hazardous stuff in it? Well, we'll take it off your hands, pre-registration, not required. We will not be charging you for it, but make sure it's carefully packaged to prevent reactions or spills and leaks, and make sure that you bring your proof of Sullivan County residency, either a photo ID or some sort of utility bill that shows you live in Sullivan County. Don't bring with you for this your regular household garbage or commercial, industrial, agricultural waste, medical wastes and pharmaceuticals, radioactive materials. Some people said, well, it's hazardous. Yes, but that's not. We actually have a radiation detector at this. And if it goes off, we're going to be sending you elsewhere. Explosives, ammunition, bulk liquids that are larger than 5 gallons, LP propane gas tanks, electronics, tires, refrigerants, refrigeration devices like air conditioners or refrigerators. We have other ways of disposing of that. They're not part of this. It's really your basic household hazardous waste that we want to see. So, and again, don't forget, because people have packaged all this up and then forgotten to bring proof that they're a Sullivan County resident. And again, we're not looking for proof that, for example, you're necessarily the full-time resident, just that you have property here where maybe you get a utility bill. Bring that with you.
And that hazardous waste event is going to be set for September 20th, 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Monticello Transfer Station. That's Dan Hoos, Communications Director for Sullivan County Government. Thanks, and I hope you have an amazing weekend.
I hope you do, too. Thanks, Kim.
When someone calls offering you a new Medicare card, coming up free groceries or extra benefits, it may sound like a good deal, but it could be a scam. After this short break, we're going to tell you more about what scammers are looking for and what you should do if they come calling. This is Radio Chatskill.
Next time on City Arts and Lectures,
Thank you so much.
Author of The God of Small Things. She'll talk to Deepa Fernandez about her memoir, Mother Mary Comes to Me. It's about her childhood in Kerala, India, including her complicated relationship with a brilliant but abusive mother. That's next time on City Arts and Lectures on this public radio station.
City Arts and Lectures, Sunday afternoon at 4 on Radio Catskill.
Support comes from Garnet Health Medical Center, Catskills. From inpatient and outpatient care to primary, urgent, and specialty care with Garnet Health doctors in Sullivan County. Exceptional lives here. Learn more at garnethealth.org.
Hi, this is Angela Page from Folk Plus. Tune in Sundays at 2 and hear contemporary singer-songwriters and their creative works all woven around a theme. That's Folk Plus, Sundays at 2 on Radio Catskill.
This is Radio Chatskill. I'm Kimberly Izar, filling in for Tim Bruno. Well, Medicare beneficiaries are being targeted by scammers trying to get their Medicare numbers through a variety of deceptive offers, including claims that people are eligible for new plastic Medicare cards, that their cards are expiring, or that they can receive free groceries or other benefits. The New York Statewide Senior Action Council is warning seniors to be especially cautious about unsolicited offers involving their Medicare information. Joining us now is Maria Alvarez, Executive Director of Statewide, to talk about the latest Medicare card scams and how people can protect themselves. Maria, thank you so much for joining us. Oh, I think we may have lost Maria. Give us a moment. We'll head to a short break and get Maria back on the phone.
Traveling people pass songs and tunes down the generations more than any other group. Next time on The Bungalow of Monkeys with me, Graham Rice, here on Radio Catskill, we'll hear British and Irish songs and tunes from and about travellers. Join me, if you'd be so kind, on Sunday afternoon at 3.
On this Old House Radio Hour, don't get eaten alive. The miracle trick that kills mosquitoes without toxic sprays or chemicals.
My approach to gardening is opening up more environment for native insects.
Plus, CNN anchor Casey Hunt takes you inside her landmark mid-century home. That's this week on This Old House Radio Hour. Sunday morning at 7 on Radio Catskill.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. We have Maria Alvarez, Executive Director of Statewide, to talk about the latest Medicare card scams and how people can protect themselves. Maria, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, Kim. I'm always happy to be here.
Well, we're happy to have you here. Well, let's, you know, start with the latest Medicare card scams. You know, what are scammers telling people right now? And what are they trying to get from Medicare beneficiaries?
Well, so the bottom line is that all of these scammers, what they're looking for is your Medicare number. And not only your Medicare number, but your personal information that will pair with that number so that they can process it through Medicare and get money fraudulently. That's the basic of everything, what it boils down to.
And why is, I can imagine this, but why is a person's Medicare number such valuable information to scammers?
Well, so this is the thing. Medicare is a $60 billion proposition for these scammers. It costs $60 billion to the taxpayer in scams and fraud. That these people are perpetrating against Medicare beneficiaries. So it's a lot of money, right? And that motivates people to then to engage in nefarious practices to gain this money. Now, so So what they do is, if there is anything happening in society, basically, there's a scam for it. So when COVID came out, there was the COVID scam. When they recycle through things and put variations on it, but the bottom line is what they're asking you is for your Medicare number and your personal information, so that then they can scam the system.
And I want to talk a little bit about some of the more specifics of some of the scams. One scam involves telling seniors that they're eligible for a new plastic Medicare card. What should people know about this claim?
Okay, what you should know is that Medicare is not giving out new cards for anything. So there's no plastic cards. You know, they're not going to issue a plastic card. They are not going to issue that. You know, sometimes they'll tell them you qualify for certain benefits and that gives you a plastic card. Anything around that is not is not true, because Medicare does not issue new cards.
And another, you know, pitch is that Medicare cards are expiring and need to be replaced. Is that ever legitimate?
No, because Medicare does never expire. You know, this is a benefit that we have paid into all of our lives. So Medicare does not expire. It's a right that we have as people who have contributed into the system.
You know, go ahead.
No. So I was just going to say, so if you get a call saying that you're, because what they try to do is to create a sense of urgency and panic in the person. And, you know, and they're experts at this. This is something that I want to say. They are these scammers, the same way that you wake up every morning and I wake up every morning to do good work. These scammers, their job is to figure out ways that people will be thrown off balance and give up their information. So I don't want anybody to feel bad if they gave out their information or partial information even, inadvertently, because they're trained to do this. So it's not, you know, it could happen to anybody. And so so just beware of that.
Are there steps, Maria, that people can take to protect their Medicare information, you know, before they might ever have to encounter one of these scams?
Yes. Well, the first thing to know is that Medicare does not call you, randomly like that. So if somebody calls and says that they're calling from the Medicare office or from CMS, the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, hang up the phone, because they do not call, much less to ask you for your information, right? So if you're ever in a conversation and somebody says, can you please, you know, what is your Medicare number? And let me specify, a conversation that has been, that you have not initiated. That's the important part. So anyway, if somebody calls you, you should not give out any information over the phone to people that are just calling you randomly like that. The best way to ascertain that you're speaking with somebody, the person that you know, which maybe you're trying to reach Medicare, is by calling you initiating the call and calling the number that is on the back of your insurance card, if it's your plan, or 1-800-MEDICARE, which is the official number for the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services.
That was Maria Alvarez, Executive Director of the New York Statewide Senior Action Council, talking about Medicare card scams and how to protect your personal information. If you suspect you've encountered Medicare fraud, you can contact the Senior Medicare Patrol at 1-800-333-4374. Maria, thank you again so much for making time.
Thank you, Kim. Have a wonderful day.
Up next, the proposed revival of Grossinger's in Liberty. We're going to learn about the developer's comeback plan for the Catskills Resort that inspired Dirty Dancing. This is Radio Chatskill.
If you've got an amazing record collection, but you also need to downsize, why not give it to Radio Catskill? We're always taking donations of clean vinyl in good condition for our music sale. Donate today at wjffradio.org.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. A piece of Catskill's history could be getting a new chapter. The former Grossinger's Catskill Resort Hotel in Liberty, once one of the best-known resorts of the Borscht Belt and an inspiration for the movie Dirty Dancing, is being eyed for a major redevelopment. Florida-based PPG Development purchased the roughly 1,029-acre property last year and is proposing a new year-round resort with a hotel, private residences, golf courses, and more. The project is now before the town's planning board and will undergo environmental review. Jason Dole spoke with Times Union reporter Maria Silva on the local edition about what's planned for the iconic property.
Maria Silva, welcome back to Radio Catskill.
Thank you so much for having me.
We're going to bring the news back to Liberty, New York, where Radio Catskill is, and talk about something that we usually talk about in the past, which is one of the big flagship fortress hotels of the Borscht Belt era, Grossinger's, here in Liberty, New York. There's talk about Grossinger's seeing some new life. What can you tell us?
Yeah, what I can say is that after years since 1986 of, you know, being abandoned and unused, Grossinger's appears to be under development, or there's at least plans to kind of revive it in the future. There's a Florida developer called PPG Development that has purchased the land that formerly housed the famous Borscht Belt resort, and they purchased it last year for $14.75 million, and they recently introduced plans to turn this, one of the most famous properties of the old Catskills, and turn it into a large year-round luxury resort and residential development. So right now the plans are in the Liberty Planning Board, and they've recently, this past summer, representatives of PPG Development attended a public meeting and presented what, you know, the plans are. And I can talk a little bit more about those plans. They basically want to, the proposal includes 100-room hotel, about 175 luxury private residences, which would have access to the resort, two golf courses, and an equestrian/polo center, a farm, sports complex, restaurants, spa, and wellness facilities. It's a huge operation, and I mean, this is located in a huge property. It's 1,029 acres in Liberty, and construction, if approved, would take a while. The developer has estimated that the proposal would happen in four phases.
I imagine they're going to be building a lot of new buildings, and you're going to have to. Is there any talk of reusing any of the original buildings or infrastructure there and repairing things? Is that in any of those four steps?
Well, there isn't much left. Most of the remaining buildings were demolished in 2018, and one of the few remaining buildings also burned in 2022. So there isn't much left there except this large golf course, and the developer has mentioned that they want to bring that back, bring that, I think it was called the Big G golf course.
Yeah, and the golf course in some ways kind of outlived the original resort. That's the aspect that kept going. And then in, you know, past couple of decades, and people would talk about doing something there, it usually hinged around the golf course. If people were showing interest in revitalizing Grossinger's, it was usually about the golf course, not a resort. But this sounds like they're planning to do, like, it sounds like they're going to showcase the golf course, but then also give people a lot of other stuff to do.
Yes. Yeah. And it's a huge build out. And again, it would take several years, but right now it's under review. The project still needs environmental review under the CEQA process, and the developer has requested a site plan and special use permit approvals. The environmental review process will review if the project will have any potential environmental impacts. But again, this would essentially bring back what was there before. So we'll see what the Liberty Planning Board concludes right after doing all the revisions and all the evaluations. But yeah, we'll keep an eye on it.
All right. Well, anecdotally, they do seem excited about it. But yes, we've got to go through the process and see what comes of this. Before we stop talking about this, though, I do want to point out to the listener, I kind of buried the headline. Your headline is Abandoned Catskills Resort That Inspired Dirty Dancing to Be Redeveloped. And I forgot to give the Dirty Dancing hook in the beginning. Yeah. And that's a famous movie everybody knows. And folks around here know that, yeah, it's based on this area and Grossinger's in particular. But in your article, like, you did some research on the history of the place. And you talk about that. And then you mentioned that there's like a TV show in the works or some sort of series that would touch on this era.
Yes, it was announced last year. I didn't actually know about this. I know about the Dirty Dancing history, but I didn't know that last year it was announced that a new scripted series was in pre-development by Alan Zweibel, who's an original writer on Saturday Night Live, and producer Harris F.B. Solomon were interested in doing a new scripted series that would tell the story of the resort through the matriarchs, you know, the founder, Jenny Grossinger, and as well as her daughter, Elaine Grossinger Edis, who actually passed away earlier this year, and she was the heiress of the Grossinger Resort. Elaine took over the resort in 1972, along with her brother, Paul, when Jenny, their mother, died, and eventually sold the resort a few years later in 1986. But yeah, there was a new scripted series that was in pre-development. I researched a little bit. I wanted to know what was up with that and if it's still going on, but I didn't find much about it. But if we do, I'd be very interested to see what they include, and if they even mention, you know, all the history, I bet they will. But yeah, so far I hadn't found much, anything new, any updates on this series, but we'll see.
People are still, there's still word out about it. So, you know, development limbo is a thing, but maybe something will come of this. But I just do want to point out there that, yeah, Alan Zweibel, that's a name that I know. And like, I just looked it up quick. He's 76 years old, which the only reason I bring that up, because that means he's somebody who probably spent time there as a young person and has an actual connection. He'd be the right age for that sort of thing. So that's interesting to see. And if it comes to be, it'll be interesting to see. So we'll keep an eye on Grossinger's here in Liberty. And if anything happens, Maria, I'll come to you and you can tell us.
Thank you so much.
Maria Silva reports for Times Union, and these stories are up now at timesunion.com. Maria, thank you for talking to us.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you so much.
Well, before we go, I want to tell you a few upcoming events that we have coming up here at Radio Catskill. And to help us break it all down, joining me now is Radio Catskill's program director, Jason Dole. How's it going?
Hey there. Going good. And we've got Pints for Public Radio coming up tomorrow.
It's happening.
It's totally happening, and we're doing that down in Berryville. So we really hope people come out for that. I don't have any information about it in front of me, unfortunately.
Rose's Bar in Berryville, 6 to 10 p.m.
Oh, here it is. There you go. I see it. Okay. Yeah, I didn't. And well, I'm going to be there. And I think so is Ronald and some of the Radio Catskill crew. And of course, there's going to be DJs there. So this is going to be real fun with DJs James Friedman, Tommy Castro, and Woody Wood Jr. We're going to have great drinks, great music, great community. It's free entry. So it's a chance to hang out. And, you know, people are always like, well, what can we do to support public radio? It's like sometimes you can just have fun. Sometimes you can just be part of the community and come out and represent, you know, but also you can make a donation and you can support the businesses that support Radio Catskill as well.
That's like a win-win: drink beer and support public radio.
Yeah. And I just want to shout out, mark your calendar of September 5th. It's our music yard sale happening here at the station. It's the Saturday of Labor Day weekend. Summer's ending, but we're going to end it with a bang. Great music sale. We're looking for donations. Donate your record collection, your CD collection. The better condition stuff is in, the more that we can get to it to support public radio. So if you're interested, just contact us here at feedback at WJFFradio.org or give us a call. We'd love to take your donation and then just come out and buy more music stuff on the 5th.
845-482-4141 is how you can reach us. That is our very own Jason Dole with the latest from the station. Jason, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Well, that's going to do it for this edition of Radio Chatskill. I'm Kimberly Izar. I'm going to catch you tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. for Farming Country, where we'll debunk astronomy myths and catch up with the Delaware Highlands Conservancy. Thanks so much for listening. It is 11 a.m.
Take a dive into the deep end, the ultimate rock music journey. Deep cuts, live tracks, and rare gems from rock, psychedelia, country, jazz, and blues. Experience the deep cuts on the deep end. Friday nights at 10, only on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville. Streaming online at WJFFradio.org. This is Radio Catskill. Local news, culture, and NPR.